Here we are, hitting up events, drinking our way through Chicago beer, and trying not to miss a thing.
Yeah, because, you know, got a cork popped out, boom, it flies like fucking 10 feet. We're like, yeah, let's do it.
You know, all you have to do is add some fruit, stir it up, and ride that milkshake wave.
Whenever I see him, I gotta take a photo with the most decorated brewer in Chicago, Jonathan Cutler.
It'll be like the stuff you hear. You ever go to every time you go to Floyd's, all the music sounds like this. Raw, raw, raw.
Sometimes you want a small beer, but really, you want a big beer.
You gotta take in all those big aromatic hops.
Hey, what are you doing this weekend? Waiting in line for a bottle release?
Should have never been a fad. The black IPA is delicious.
Hey, and welcome to Chicago Beer Pass. I'm Brad Chmielewski.
Brad, what's up, man? I'm Nick White.
And we are on site at Bubble House.
The House of Bubbles?
Yeah, special guest.
We got a special guest. It's John from Bubble House Brewing Company. How
Hello,
are you,
fellas.
Son?
I'm very good.
Yeah, so head brewer and owner, right?
Head brewer and owner along with my wife, yeah.
Well, great. Thanks for having us. This is awesome.
My pleasure. I'm glad you guys drove out.
Yeah. Thanks for making the trip. Yeah, cheers.
We are in a beautiful Lisle, Illinois.
Right.
Western suburbs. Hello.
Right down the street or right down the corner from Bavarian Lodge.
Bee Lodge. Yeah. I haven't been there in like since 2009, it feels like.
Craft beer destination for many.
Yeah, we get a lot of pre and post visits from we're going to the lodge or we just came from the lodge. So it's a good...
That's
a good spot.
That's our thought too. We might have to go there after we're all done.
I mean, we're already here, so
yeah.
We might as well. You know,
the hard work is open.
Yeah, we made it out. But I've been here about a year ago. You guys like popped up. I was like, I don't know who Bubble House is. I should check this out. And so I drove out here, and you've done a lot with the place even since a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, we're a small team, so we got open. We came out, you know, at the end of the pandemic, kind of, and so it was just like, let's get the doors open. We can pour beer, so let's pour beer. Mm-hmm. So we've been constantly working ever since to sort of continue enhancing not only this event space that we're hanging out in, but also the patio and things like that, because it's when you find time to do it, right?
Right. So how long has officially been open? Is it about coming up on 3 years? 2 years?
No. About a year and a half. November 2021. So, yeah, it seems longer than that now, but it was definitely, it's about a year and a half, just about.
Congratulations, man. This is a fantastic space. It feels right in this joint, you know?
Yeah.
What was this when you showed up? What was this place?
So it was a abandoned warehouse building.
Wow.
Actually, if you guys parked in back, I don't know, but the majority of our parking's in the back of the building, which kind of freaks people out sometimes. But there was another portion of this building that was actually condemned and knocked down.
Oh, damn.
And that's what created all of our parking. So it was vacant for a while. Before that, it was like aftermarket automotive stereo and like alarm systems.
Pimp my ride kind of place.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we were tipped off that it was coming on the market and really like the, you know, the Ogden location in terms of street visibility, which is really cool.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, price is right, and it wasn't that far from home.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were looking for a space? Did you have, like, what, like, going back, what's your, like, beer path or beer journey?
So, I mean, I started homebrewing in around 2003. So shortly out of college, I was, at the time, for a few months, still living with my parents, and they got bummed out when I used to brew in the kitchen and things like that. So, but kind of carried it on. And so I, you know, that was kind of a hobby that just sort of ebbed and flowed throughout life, depending on when my kids were born, it you know, went way down, or when we had a small apartment, it went way down.
Yeah.
But it was always kind of there in the background. In terms of, you know, ramping up to get Bubble House going, I was a participant of, if you're familiar with Skeleton Key in Woodridge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I went through their incubator program, which was like a 4 or 5 month kind of front of house, back of house, you know, think about it as like an internship, so to speak.
Yeah, okay.
And that was coming off the back of some College of DuPage Business of Craft Beer courses.
COD.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
So, you know, it was, you know, I've been working a corporate job for, at that time, it was like 15 years, and we were just sort of like, all right, something's got to give. I want to change it up a little bit.
Sure, okay.
So we just started kind of pushing out, trying to see how committed we were to any one thing, and everything kept coming back to beer a little bit.
Okay.
I didn't know that about Skeleton Key, how
that
they were kind of...
incubator, yeah.
That it was an incubator, and they helped other breweries. That's actually very cool.
Yeah, it was. I mean, really cool program, because what it did for me, which was hugely vital in terms of taking this, you know, big risk of quitting a pretty steady 9-to-5 and, and throwing everything into this, was just sort of a confidence level of translating knowledge that I gained from those courses, from homebrewing. I went through and did level one and level two Cicerone certifications. So, you know, it was just really like, all right, functionally, they gave me a window into this is how it works, and I feel confident that I can manage through that process.
Yeah, from like a professional level.
Yeah, so the pandemic really, I think, hurt that program a little bit.
Sure,
I'm not sure what the future of it is now, but...
And tornado.
Yeah, none of that helped.
Right.
So I currently, you know, myself, GarageBand in Plainfield, and Brother Chimp out in North Aurora are all folks have gone through that program.
So. That's new news to me. That's cool. Well, congrats on that. Was your thought, like, going through that to open up your own space, or was it just to go, like, maybe go work in another brewery, like, be a brewer there?
No, it was always open up my own space. I mean, I think most of that was because, well, I don't know what it was because. Foolishness or just like, you know, just a thirst for pain.
You're a man that knows what he wants.
Well,
you know?
I wanted to brew and I wanted to have some ownership. Right?
Okay.
Like my old job was very much, you know, it was a corporate gig. So it was not bad by any means, but it was very little... agency in terms of what was actually happening day to day. And that was, for me personally, frustrating over the long haul. So I wanted something that we could control and create a space that I felt, you know, that mirrored some of the spaces that I've been to and really fell in love with just in terms of the look and feel and, you know, styles of beer that are being presented.
Okay.
Yeah. And you're the captain of the ship here. Let's talk about, you know, capacity, like, What size did you go, and then what made you go that size for the brew house and the fermenters and such?
Yeah, so we brew on a 7-barrel PKW system, Portland Kettle Works. It is what they call indirect fire, so it's got burners and a blower that goes into a chamber that wraps around the lower like quarter of both our HLT and our boil kettle. I went with them. Primarily because I have friends out on the West Coast, and before I opened this place, when I had free time and money, we used to go out there once a year. And while we were out there, we went and visited with them and kind of walked through their show floor, and they took us through their, you know, the production facility where they build all the tanks. And I was just really impressed with sort of the level of quality and what they were putting out. I went with indirect fire somewhat from a nostalgia factor and also from a... of cost avoidance of trying to avoid a steam boiler and all the different pipings and all the problems that go with maintaining that system over a long time. So that was kind of my thought process there. And then 7-barrel was really kind of a sweet spot that I hope I don't come to regret. Although if I do, it'll be because of good reasons that we can't keep up with, you know, producing enough beer, but it was really to try to turn as many different styles as we could. So my hope is that if you come here, you know, today and you come here, 6 weeks from now, there might be 3 or 4 different beers up on the menu that you didn't have previously.
Yeah.
So that was really important to me because, you know, you look at a market that you guys are very familiar with in Chicago that is very crowded. My goal wasn't to be on Binney's shelves right out of the gate and sort of be mass producing any one style of beer. It was kind of, let's brew as much and as varied of styles as we can and then see what the community really picks up on and what they, you know, what they want more of.
Uh-huh.
And a year and a half in, you know, some of those are becoming quite clear. So we're sort of changing our plan accordingly. But, you know, that's great. That's good feedback to have. And that's kind of smaller batches, more rotation. That's exciting to me, right? I want people to want to come back all the time.
Right. Yeah. And going with that system, especially looking for it during the end of the pandemic, getting something from Germany or China was that was just not going to happen in probably a timely fashion, too.
Yeah, I mean, funny you should bring that up. I mean, I think I had this system picked out and partially paid for pre-pandemic.
Oh, damn, okay.
So we were sort of like ready to go. We kind of were eyeing May 2020 as our opening date.
Okay.
Now, knowing how permitting and build out goes, that may have been wholly unrealistic, regardless of a pandemic.
Sure.
But the pandemic hit, and we sort of pumped the brakes. So, you know, luckily we were in a position, the way our lease was structured, things like that, that we could sort of, we had a little bit more breathing
right.
room.
You weren't forced to open and be like, exactly. Oh, crap, this didn't work out.
And,
oh, no.
Yeah, and deal with all that. Now, you know, my buddy Steve, who's at Brother Chimp out in North Aurora, he did open on, I think it was St. Paddy's Day of 2020, and he's doing quite well. So yeah. He was able to weather the storm, but I know it was not easy. So
okay, man. So as you, we're drinking, we have a lot of different beers in front of us. You're talking about the styles and what, I don't know, the variety here, but what are some of the things we have here, and I guess what do you like to brew?
Yeah, I mean, that was always an interesting question, like when we were just starting to get going, people were like, well, what's your, do you have a theme or a niche in terms of beer style?
And yeah.
I love way too many beers to really pitch ourselves as a hazy or a sour or any of that. So my main goal as a brewer is to have 12 taps flowing at any given time and have something that can kind of be a starting point for anybody. So I like to keep, you know, a good 3 or 4 beers if possible, probably 4 as we move into more months of light end beers. So like right now we have the Kolsch, the Bohemian Pilsner, and a Saison, and I've got...
That Kolsch was fantastic. I had one already, and...
Proper glassware, too.
It was just gone. I don't know what happened, and just disappeared.
I appreciate that. That was it. That was kind of a... That was a beer that I entered into the Skeleton Key Incubator Program. Sort of what, you know, if you can say anything about flagship beers, that would be one of our flagship beers in terms of a style that we really love. My wife April and I went to Germany for our honeymoon, and sort of... You know, I was dabbling in craft beer, but she was still very much a Coors Light sort of domestic light beer drinker. And Kolsch was really a kind of a gateway of eye-opener in terms of like really fresh and complex, but also simple at the same time. And so she really fell in love with it there.
And she's, she's on the bandwagon now.
So, yeah, she'll always say that. Yeah, she'll always say that, like, she wasn't quite confident that I had really hit the mark in the first few iterations of homebrewing that recipe and kind of trying to get it to a point where she was like, okay, it's getting better now. It's getting better. Keep trying.
I'll take that Coors Light.
But that's good because, I mean, she's normally not a critic of my beer at all.
Love that she's passionate, though. This sounds great. Yeah.
She's the reason that Bubble House exists. You know, if she wasn't kind of in the background saying, like, your beer's good, you know, I'm my own worst critic. She was like, I think you can do this. Let's do it, you know?
Yeah.
Screw it. Let's go for it. So she was very much, you know, she wasn't resistant at all. Let me just say that. She was pushing me. A lot of people go like, you know, they have this stereotypical view of like, oh, well, what did your other half think? And I'm like, no, she was the reason that we're here kind of. It's like, she's like, go do it. You hate your current job. Go do it.
And at least giving you the criticism rather than friends, or you're like, try my beer. They're like, this is great, free beer. Yeah. But yeah, your spouse is often like, you can do better. Yeah. You're like, damn it, you're right.
She understands the bigger picture. And it's not just like, oh, my husband, it's cool my husband made a beer. She's thinking about the entire picture.
Yeah. And I appreciate you guys bringing that. And I'm not going to throw any of my family or friends under the bus. But yes, as a home brewer, you get a lot of, oh, this is amazing.
Exactly.
And you're kind of like, I know this is not amazing, so...
You're like, take all this. You're like, no, this, I'm good.
Is not... Your false praise is not good for me right now.
That Kolsch beer, and that now Nick had the Smash, and I have the Smash. That's a fun style because I don't ever see a Smash.
You never see Smash.
Okay, and, so from day one, so the Smash you're drinking right now is, I think, the fourth beer I ever brewed here. So it was the first Smash beer I ever did, and ever since... We try to keep one on at all times.
Okay.
Because I really do think it's a great, it's a really informative style. You know, it lets you isolate a hop and give people, even if they just want a taste of it, they might learn, oh, I don't like Mosaic. That beer does not hit my palate very well. So we've done Mosaic, Citra, Cascade, Amarillo. And those beers have been really popular. They're really...
Amarillo, that's an OG hop right there.
Yeah,
right.
Most of them, you know, drop out real clean. They're like, you try to keep them at a fairly... This is probably the stronger end of it at 6.5%, but most of them I try to keep in the 5.5% to 6% range. So they're, you know, they're not too potent and people can sit back and enjoy them. But yeah, they've been super fun to try out, you know, different malts and really lean into them and then tell people, like, this is all Pilsner malt and Citra. You know, what do you think about it?
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll try to keep doing those. The challenge for me now is balancing new recipes with bringing back beers that people are like, hey, when's this coming back? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a fun and also challenging balance to kind of be like, all right, well, I as a brewer want to continually try to push, you know, push into new territory, brew new things. But some people are like, we hung a bunch of our old menu boards up in the tap room so people could, hey, yeah, I remember that beer. I love that beer. When's it coming back? So that's been awesome. But it's also been like, now they're much more familiar and aware with, like, why aren't you brewing that beer more?
Yeah, it's a good problem to have.
Exactly. Passionate fans.
Yeah, what do you find that people out here are enjoying, like, more so? That's something we always, like, wonder when we go to these places. And, you know, especially living in the city, you could just either bike or walk to these places. So you're like, give me that 15% stout. Yeah. I'm just, like, going to walk home or I'll get the Uber.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like a lot of places, IPAs still reign supreme in terms of, you know, your sell-through. So another of our kind of, the beer I brewed the most here is a beer called 10 Second Hug, which will be coming out. And it's got a good story behind it, but it'll be coming out next week. And then I have a 20 Second Hug, which is the double hazy version of that.
Oh, okay.
So this is the first time actually they're fermenting away right next to each other. So I feel that might make them even more delicious and lovable because they have that kind of that mutual effect on each other. So hazy IPAs are always big, but one of the things I think we get a lot of feedback on is our sours. So I try to make sure that we always have one or two sours, especially in the summertime.
Okay.
And people really seem to gravitate towards those sours. Typically going to be fruited of some kind, although I do a just a dry hop, really clean sour in the summertime that people loved last year. But what I like about sours is, you know, I don't really like thick, smoothie-style sours. I really prefer still like crisp, easily drinkable, low ABV beer that's
more
gonna
of a
really
kettle
be
sour.
Yeah,
kind
they're
of
all
thing.
Kettle sours. Okay. So tart, but not funky. Just really kind of crisp and crushable with a balanced fruit profile. So that's balance is always the key, I think, with any of these styles.
Yeah.
And then the other beer I would say that this community has really gravitated towards is our Mexican lager. Mm-hmm. So it started out as a collaboration that we did with the Park District. They do the Lyle Park District does a summer concert series throughout the summer. They do it July 3rd with fireworks, and then every Wednesday following that for a couple weeks. So we partnered with them, and we brewed this Mexican lager that we were pouring there. And I think we ran through it before the last concert series happened.
Okay.
So we've gotten a few more tanks in-house now, a couple bright tanks that we have to try to manage through that supply. But that's a beer that we constantly get asked. It's called Isle of Lyle, so I think the name
it helps people
represent.
This is my brewery.
It's
got my name.
I think one guy said, like, just because of the name, I'd love to have that beer on my kegerator at home just when people come over, you know.
Yeah,
you just finished that Kolsch too, right?
It just goes down easy and fun.
Right?
Yeah, man. It's very nice. Speaking of fun, man, when you think about the name Bubble House, right, you think about bubbles. And we're like, well, who doesn't like bubbles, right? It just kind of makes you happy to say it, you know. And then you start thinking about other stuff, too. But can you walk us through, like, how you ended up with that name? And then, like, maybe what were some of the ones that hit the cutting room floor before you landed on Bubble House?
So Bubble House was, it really kind of came out of a, just sort of a sentiment and a feel that we were trying to create, right? Like, lively, fun, energetic. So we always talk about it from like a figurative and literal representation. So like literally, as you actually called out at the top of the talk, we are a house of bubbles, you know? So like we talk about it from, you know, from the minute I start seeing bubbles roiling on the surface of the boil kettle through, you know, as a home brewer, I don't know if there's anything sweeter than that soft bubble through an airlock after you brewed the previous day and you're like, we did it. It's happening.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like I didn't kill the yeast, or I didn't do something like we have life. So
yeah.
You know, that bubble through the airlock, and then, you know, the bubbles, the carbonation in the glass are so important to the appreciation of what beer is and providing that sensory impact to you. So that was the kind of literal representation. And then figuratively, like our favorite thing about beer, like my wife and I, is really going to a tap room and just feeling an energy, right? And sure. And you know, we find ourselves talking to strangers in a brewery more than any other place on the planet, because people are just sort of in a relaxed atmosphere. They're all there for a shared love of a product, and so you start having these conversations and just kind of blow your mind about the different walks of life that are all kind of bonded over a glass of beer. So that was really important to us, of creating a community space where people could come in and sort of lift each other up, you know, bubble up ideas, as we say, and kind of, you know,
I love it.
Hang out.
That's cool.
I don't remember many on the cutting room floor, because if you've ever kind of scrolled through Untappd and tried to avoid overlap of a pre-established beer name or a pre-established brewery name, now that we're up like in the Opal's 10,000s, you know, shortly of breweries. Actually, the Bohemian Pills Youthful Moon, I still get some mail sent to me for Youthful Moon Brewing Company. That was one of our potential early brewery names that came out of a story with my young son when he you know, was trying to describe a crescent moon in the sky, and he called it like a youthful moon. So that didn't wind up, but it is now a beer name, so we tried to carry that through just a little bit.
Okay. And then the window kind of motif is just the house. Every house has windows.
So yeah. Yeah, that was just sort of a sketch that I did one day, and we just sort of fell on it in terms of just a clean, simple sort of, you know, bubble house. You see it, and it kind of makes sense at that point.
Does anyone ever come in thinking it's a laundromat?
No, we did talk about
How
that.
How dare you? How dare
I you? I used to go to a laundromat before, you know, we all had a unit with no fucking laundry. So we've all been to laundromats, and there was a spot called the soap box.
Yeah.
It was a soap box, and it was down the street from my old apartment.
Yeah, or pains me to say boba tea, or, you know. Yeah, there has been some of that.
But you know, a
I haven't seen anybody rolling with a bag of dirty laundry. And if they did, I would offer them a beer, and they'd probably be okay with it. So,
man, if I saw a laundromat and it had these beers on draft, though, that's a win. So if there's a second location,
right? As you expand down your
that
whole,
is true.
Like,
I mean, you know,
yeah,
like,
I went to college down at U of I Champaign, and there was a bar / laundromat down there. That was a pretty. It's a pretty good business concept. It works.
Right, yeah.
You got time to kill.
Yeah, you got a consumer that's locked in there for about 45 minutes to an hour.
At least,
so
yeah.
That's cool. So what else? We got this Imperial Stout and a Black IPA.
My flight's different. I haven't had the Black IPA yet. Brad's flight is different from my flight. I went Schwarz beer, Kolsch, West Coast IPA, and Hazy. So, and then Brad's is Imperial Stout, Saison, Bohemian Pills, and Black IPA.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Black IPA Noir Wall is actually a collaboration we did with Skeleton Key. So, you know, we were like in build out during all of their tornado troubles.
I'll give that to Nick.
He loves a nice Black IPA.
They were doing all this, like, this brewery tour where they were doing collaborations with everybody because their brew house was not, you know, in service. So, we were like, God damn, they've done so much for us, and we can't, like, we're in no position to help out at all. So we've just got open, and I think we, you know, I started brewing in late September for our November open, and they came in, like, mid-November, and we did that in 2021, and we just did it again in 2022. So I hope that they'll agree to come back all the time and continue brewing it. I really love that beer. And you don't see a ton of Black IPAs out in the market, but there are some people who are really, really, really in love with the style.
It had its run, and I was like, why was this a fad?
Yeah.
You know, like I feel like Gozo's was a fad, and surely after that, Black IPA. And then we've been on this hazy train for the longest, or Mexican hot chocolate stout train for the longest.
Yeah.
And the Black IPA just kind of came and went. I'm like, you know what? Yeah. I'd rather see that more than some of these other longer trends.
Yeah, it's crazy to me because you look at a beer like, I think, like Schwarz, which is having a really good kind of, a lot of people who are aware now and in love with this dark but light beer.
Yeah.
And it really seems to have some. But for me, there's so many hoppy fans out there that Black IPAs, when done well, are a really kind of clean and interesting mix of flavors, right? You get that, like, nice roast and kind of light chocolate, but still, like, really crisp, right? You're still got bitterness in the back end to kind of clean everything away and then leave you, like, a little bright citrus on it. So.
Yeah, and I think part of it is, too, like, some of them kind of graduated to just hoppy stouts. Like Close Encounter from Pipeworks, that was a Black IPA, now it's a hoppy stout. Defender is referred to as an American stout, but it's really a hoppy black
beer.
That's a good point. Yeah, I hadn't really put that together, but yeah, that is it's true. It's
Some of those
good marketing.
Some of those find the marketing name for it because, as we've learned, sometimes the style doesn't matter. As you're just like, you make up names, kind of.
Right, because what was it? Lake Effect had a, it was a Belgian wit.
Right.
And they call it a white IPA. And I'm like, this is not, this is a wit.
The evening Kolsch I got duped on, which was really a dark Kolsch. And I was like, I was very disappointed in Half Acre because I was like, I did not want this. Yeah. And you tricked me.
You know, I learned early on never say never about things I will or won't do, but I did enter into this industry, you know, largely unfamiliar with, but the brief kind of contextually things that I've been just going to breweries for, you know, years and years and years. But I've tried to say, like, you know, I don't want to make up styles. I want to try to live within existing styles, but I also don't want to be hamstrung by the fact that if a beer doesn't exist, I don't want to be afraid to try a combination of flavors.
Yeah.
I do have issue with the hoppy lager. I thought IPL was a great beer style. India Pale Lager, I thought really that like spoke to me, but now we're branching out into cold IPAs. There's new styles happening all the time that I get, you know, even as a brewer in the industry, I get a little bit like, I don't even know what I'm talking about here.
Italian Pilsner, yeah.
What is a California IPA? You know, like, this is, like, they're delicious, but I'm not sure exactly what to expect.
Where's the hazy stout?
I also have a little old man get off my lawn about American IPA now just being, it means nothing. Like, you have to say West Coast to me or an American IPA is going to be hazy.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. The IPA term is... it's a very loose term now because some people think it's a hazy. Some people think it's a crisp IPA.
Bone dry. Like
Or it's a West Coast like hop bomb. So
or you know, the Midwest, the bill is too hard. It is totally different from like the Stone IPA. Yeah, so say an IPA, we need more data. We need more info.
Yeah. So if I don't have a descriptor and I just see American IPA, a lot of times I won't necessarily get it because I don't typically drink hazy IPAs a whole ton.
True. Right.
So I'm always wary of like, I don't know. I got to do a bunch of research to to check out what I'm actually getting into.
Yeah.
What do you drink then? You're brewing all these beers. What's your favorite style? If you could just brew one style of beer all day and everyone bought it all the time, what would you go with?
I think I would, I don't know. I sort of am changing, you know, and I change very seasonally as well. I still will always go for a West Coast IPA if somebody has one on the menu.
Okay. Like you walk in the door and you see it, you're just getting that.
That'll be my starting point, and I'll branch out from there. But, you know, recently I've started appreciating, like a lot of the beer community, which is awesome, lighter, more, you know, lager, crisper styles that are, you know, I think a little more indicative of how well is a brewer able to put together these minimal pieces and put forward a beer that you could just drink over and over again. So I don't like to hop around all that much these days. I kind of like to settle into one or two beers and like at least styles and really appreciate them for, you know, what you get after a pint. I think flights are great, but I think you really need at least 10 ounces of a beer to truly appreciate sort of how it affects your palate over time. I would say first West Coast IPA and then probably like a Pilsner.
Okay.
If I, you know, I would need more tank capacity to only brew Pilsners though. So
what was Cutler's dad thing? If you can't brew a...
Oh, yeah. If you say you can draw, then draw me a horse, right? So he's like, I don't want to try anything else you made. I want to try the lager. I want to try the Pilsner. And if I like that, then I'll go into these other styles. But if you can draw me a horse. You know, that was Cutler's dad's thing. And I'm like, you know what? When you say it like that, and you got this cool mustache.
mustache does help, yeah.
I'm like, he makes a lot of sense.
No, I like that. And, you know, I try not to get, like, too, you know. Like I said before, I'm, you know, my own worst critic. I have a lot of anxiety seems a little strong. But, like, I really want to make sure that, like, I didn't start a brewery to put out mediocre beer.
Right. Right.
And I know I have a lot of ground to continue to make up, but like I really want to try to put forth styles that I think are representative beers that people want to drink and that are expressive of what that style is supposed to be. So things like the Kolsch or, you know, this Bohemian Pils, I am as much as I'll say I'm proud of beers, I'm proud of those beers in that they present the style as I think it, you know, at least the Bubble House take on okay. close to what it should be. They're bright, they're crisp, you know, and we try to keep things tidy and clean around here to avoid some of those off flavors that can creep in when they don't have a lot of stuff to hide behind.
Beer-flavored beer. Beer that makes you want to finish this beer and have another beer.
Yeah.
Right? These things are important. You know, we take it for granted. You know,
that's my niche. When people ask about me, that's my niche.
Yeah, I want you to have another beer. I want my beer to be good enough that you have another one.
Well, yeah, and yeah. I think what's great about craft beer is that there is so much, you know, the horizon line is so wide for people to express all these different types of beer. I might not love all of them, but certainly if the market's supporting them, then other people do.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of beers that I feel are just too over the top that I don't necessarily want to. I don't enjoy drinking them, so I don't want to put them out. To this point, you know, we've stayed away from lactose and things like milkshake IPAs because I just don't think that they have a great drinkability ratio in terms of how many you want to drink before you can.
Where was I? Maybe it was Rabbit Brewing, and she's like, milkshake IPA is like, you know, putting like way too much pepper on the steak. It's like, I didn't come here for the pepper. I came here for the steak. So why is there so much fucking pepper on my steak? That's how she talked about milkshake IPA. So I'm like, she's not wrong.
It's a crusted steak.
I like that. I think there's room for all this stuff as a expression of what beer can be. How varied and wide can it be? And how many different palates can it serve? Because obviously craft beer has picked up a lot of people, especially in the IPA category, with toning down bitterness and presenting a lot of citrus, tropical, fruity flavors that are a little bit softer on people's palates. And they go, oh, I thought I hated IPA. It turns out I just don't really like, you know, tongue-raking bitterness.
Right.
I think I don't want to say that those beers shouldn't exist. I just, like, that's not where I want to reside as a brewer necessarily.
Yeah.
As a brewer, that sounded, that came off really like me sitting up here on this pedestal, but no. My personal, the way that I kind of came up brewing and appreciating beer, these are just, I'm brewing more styles that I love and that I want to have more of in the
world. Well, it doesn't benefit any you or breweries that try to like chase the trends or chase the styles because the consumer is very fickle. And so to do that, you just, you will never, you're always behind, right?
Yeah. It makes more sense to just do what makes sense for you.
Yeah.
Whatever your thing is, whatever you like, it makes sense to just do that.
Yeah. And I think, like I said before, more and more, it's also what does our community want, right? So, you know, it was always a worry of mine, like, oh, I really love this Kolsch. I really like, I stand behind it as a beer. It's got a story, right? It's named Flitterwochen because that's honeymoon in German. That's where my wife and I went up for our honeymoon. And so, like, you know, we have very, like, emotional attachments to this beer. I'm like, God, if people don't love this beer, then, and I can't brew it anymore, I'm going to be a little sad, but I'm not going to continue brewing it and have it just sit there. Luckily, people enjoy it, and it's gone far. But, like, you know, that's like the Mexican lager. I was like, oh, why did we pick this style that eats up our tank space for longer, and now that's what everybody wants to drink in the summer, and people keep going, when's it coming back? And I thought it was going to be like a once a year, like for the summer concert series thing.
Everybody's like, play that song, man. Uh-huh. Play that song.
Yeah. And so, you know, now I'm like, okay, so we've got to change sort of, we got to get more equipment in that allows us to create that beer more often. Okay. So more than anything, I shouldn't frame it as only what I want, but like, you know, our regulars and our fans who are coming back, you know, week after week, what do they want? And you know, what do they prefer to have fill that glass? Luckily for me, a lot of times it's they like that. Last week we had this West Coast. Now we have this different West Coast, right?
Yeah.
And so they're similar styles, but just a different representation of hops and a combination of ingredients.
Yeah.
So, you know, that to me is a good fan base to have because they're supportive of stretching the styles to a point.
Yeah.
Although a lot of people come in here and say, like, I'm so happy you don't have, like, a million, like, only hazy IPAs available or whatever. And I told them, that sells. So the minute we get over like a third of our menu is hazy IPAs, you can pull me aside and kind of say like, hey, John, you said that this was never going to happen here. And I'll be like, that's true. Let me do something about it. We'll balance out a little bit more.
And talking about the community, like we're here, it's 4:20 today, and there's a lot happening out there. You got a food truck. There's a game night with some sort of like crooker.
Well, there's some game that our guy told us about, and he said the name of the game, and we're like, I have no idea what you're saying right now.
It is Crokinole, and I will use this opportunity to pronounce that it is probably the best taproom game that exists. Now, I probably shouldn't say that because I don't want other people to start stealing it from us, but it is essentially kind of like shuffleboard or bags on a tabletop. Right? Okay. It's the kind of game where you don't need to pay attention, so you can have a conversation, drink beers with your friends. When it's your turn, you look at the lay of the land and you decide what your play is. So we have recently partnered up with a Crokinole club, Windy City Crokinole.
What?
They're the ones who are coming in on Thursday.
We've never heard of this before today, and now there's a club.
Google it, because it's becoming bigger and bigger. It's out of Canada, so in Canada they're crazy about it. You can find like YouTube tournaments of it, and it's like a bunch of people at folding card tables in a VFW, and they're pretty intense about it.
Crokinole.
So, Crokinole. C-R-O-K-I-N-O-L-E.
Oh, man.
It's amazing.
Okay.
Amazing game. Again, takes a little effort because the boards are massive and wooden, so we had to create I built a special holder for them over in the corner, but it's something that we discovered at a brewery.
Yeah.
My wife and I, of all places, in a brewery in Albuquerque, New Mexico, is about as far from the Canadian border as you can get. But we wound up, instead of going out to dinner that night, we wound up staying there and drinking beers with strangers playing Crokinole for like 4 hours.
Okay.
So we pretty much, and then it took me like 3 years to try to remember how to spell that game. Or it was actually, if you could see the Google searches I probably did at that time, they were pretty comical because I didn't remember the name, but it was like disc flicking something, wooden game.
You started to second guess yourself, like, did I make all this
up? Did that happen? Uh-huh. Someone make this up? Because that's cool. Yeah, we haven't seen that because everyone's got the like string with the hook every place has that.
Well, so we're trying to build more of a community around it. I will say this, like, we've had trouble building specific nights for it. Everyone who comes in when they're here, we have three boards in house, and those three boards are quickly out on the floor on a busy Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So everyone loves playing it, but I think people get a little scared off when we say, like, hey, we're going to have, like, a tournament, even though it's just kind of casual, meant to have fun.
Sure, yeah.
But people are like, wow, that's not me. I'm not a tournament Crokinole player.
Right.
So funny.
That's like another level,
so, we try to keep, that's part of the game, right? It's good beer. It's also events and giving people a reason to come out, right? You can drink a lot of good beer in Chicagoland at many different locations. So we're all sort of eaten from that same
pie. And
then
the food truck thing, can you just order food and have it delivered too? So anything or can
we
to the food truck?
We actually, we promote and partner with a local Lyle, like Italian restaurant, Pizzeria.
Okay.
So they do free delivery here. But we encourage people to support our vendors when they show up on site and have food to buy. But when we don't have a food truck, people bring in carry out or order pizzas in. I'm in the process. This is
Exclusive
announcement.
Talk about it. Talk about
it. Maybe I shouldn't, because
I don't know. We're always breaking news.
It's not that
and
great.
People don't appreciate.
Our plan is.
We
either I dreamed it or once upon a time I came upon an establishment that had a pizza phone. So I have a phone in house that is not hooked up yet because I got a lot of shit going on.
And so it's like a present, a red phone,
it's like a bat phone,
like Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah. It has no dial. You just pick it up, and it's going to call our buddies Brazzies and Lyle.
Oh, I love this.
And we're going to try to design like a little – man, I'm giving away
too much. Like a pizza booth, like a phone booth, but it's –
Well, I don't want to go that far because I got limited floor space in here. Okay. But,
this
yes,
is good, man.
A pizza phone where you pick it up, and it just connects you to them. So that's been my dream. And my wife's like, did you dream this, or did you actually encounter this somewhere? And I feel like I encountered it somewhere, but I can't remember where.
They would have to have a phone too, right? Like, I don't know
how they have a phone.
Right, but they would have to have a separate. I don't even know how this works.
No, I'm not going to waste your listeners' time talking about the weird coding that you have to do to program this phone to dial a certain number, but it happens.
Okay.
Once it hits production, it's going to be good.
Yeah.
That's going to be good.
I told my wife it's a lifelong dream, and she said it's absolutely not a lifelong dream. So it's probably been the last, I don't know, 10 to 20 years.
Like, I was 5 years old, and I just wanted to pizza pick phone. Up the phone. That's crazy. Okay. So we got to play this game.
Yeah, man.
Get food, get pizza, get tamales today.
Yeah, tamales,
right?
Tamales Plus has been... So we met her and we instantly fell in love with her. She was really kind of vibed with us. And so she's been looking for places to kind of post up in regional locations. And she's really trying to push pre-orders. So tamales are a great, you know, they keep and reheat pretty well.
Yeah.
So she's been here the last couple Thursdays, and she's going to be here the Thursdays at least through May. Post up to serve not only our taproom customers, but also, you know, she'll take, excuse me, pre-orders online. And then you can come pick up, you know, two dozen tamales or whatever. And
that's cool. Hell yeah. Being in Chicago, week, so. We love a tamale guy who just comes around, shows up when you need him.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you don't know you need him, he's there.
He's there.
Yeah.
Like,
I've had a few nights in my life where a tamale guy was a welcome sight. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, man. Love the space, man. I appreciate what you're doing here. I like what you talk about with the education piece with the smash beers, right? Or just kind of having approachable styles where people can be excited. And not have, you know, not be intimidated by all these different types of beers. That this is all a very cool scene, man.
So. Yeah, I appreciate that. That's big to me. I think when I was going through like the COD courses, a lot of people always said you could have C-minus beer and A-plus service and do pretty well. Or you could have A-plus beer and C-minus service and you might not make it to your second year, right? Because, you know, beer is a experience and the music you're listening to, the company you're in can really affect your appreciation of a style. So, like, that's one thing that I'm trying to impress on our staff, and I've been very fortunate that the people we hired they feel like family now. They just are really great people, and they care about Bubble House, I think, as much as I do, maybe more sometimes. But, you know, like, welcoming people into this space is the first step in creating somebody who wants to come back. So, like, we're trying to be... Yeah, a place where people can learn about beer and experience different styles and just have a relaxed atmosphere to hang out in and not feel overwhelmed or like they don't know enough about beer to appreciate a beer, right? Like, I don't ever want beer really to approach wine territory where people feel locked out because of price points or just knowledge or, you know, whatever that case might be, right? Beer is a very... It's for the people, right? It's for
so
the people
true.
To kind
so
of to come together over. And it's been a huge, you know, I think it's a huge benefit in moderation for, you know, to have
or something.
Yeah. Well, there's time for everything, right?
And then with Illinois Craft Beer Week coming up, do you have events planned? Are you going to be at Beer Under Glass?
So we will be at Beer Under Glass. We do
you
have...
You want to Beer Under Glass?
Yeah, I should. Yeah, okay. I'll be back from Montana. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have... You know, I think we have some big weeks and beer releases planned for that. We may be releasing the freshest batch of that Mexican Lager Isle of Lyle around that time.
That to Beer Under Glass?
We'll see.
Okay.
I like to keep that close to my chest a little bit. But no, whatever style is hitting best at that moment, that's what we'll try to bring.
Cool.
We'll be there. I know we have a lot of food and music throughout those weekends that kind of surround Beer Under Glass. So it should be a pretty awesome time. I know the passport system is coming back for this year, which is different than in past years where, if you guys remember, it was like the like a window where you took a picture of and like posted it. This is an actual physical passport that people will get to kind of travel around. And
yeah, they have done the passport many a times, and I have never understood it. So we visit places all the time, so it's hard for us to be like,
Think for a certain sect of people, it's just it's a thing that, again, the Guild is doing, which I think is amazing, to just try to generate people's interest in trying new places. So don't just go to the places that are 15 minutes from your house. If you've heard good things about a place that's 30 minutes, go make a day of it, right? Go check out Go to Tinley Park and check out Soundgrowler and Hailstorm Brothership and all, you know, like there's pockets growing up everywhere. So if you love beer that much, go out and sample other people's stuff. And I think all of us in the industry are really receptive to that because that's what we're here for, right? We want new people to come in and experience it and tell their friends. And say they had a good, bad, or a different.
That's why we do the podcast,
yeah,
really,
that's
right?
Very true. Yeah, speaking of friends, this is right off the expressway. It's pretty easy to get here. But who are some of your closest brewery friends nearby? So if someone comes out and they go to Beelage and they come to Bubble House, what are some of the other cool spots that you like to hit for breweries-wise? Just a couple of close breweries.
Well, obviously Skeleton Key, you know.
Skeleton Key, that's right. Darren.
Can't shout them out enough.
Icon Oak is pretty close.
Icon Oak's right around the corner. Yeah. So, yeah, we go there. My family goes there a lot for dinner and beers. I'm a big fan of the guys over at Miskatonic in Darien. And we've got
crazy fucking logo at Miskatonic. Yeah. Yeah. But the chick with the dress and the tentacles? Okay.
H.P. Lovecraft, that's some good stuff. And they're actually opening a new downtown Naperville spot.
Miskatonic
with,
is?
Yeah, with a restaurant. So that's supposed to be coming this year. But then we got the new Noon Whistle location. Sawmouth is in Naperville. Yeah. Alter's right down the street. Goldfinger's down in Downers Grove. So we were just over at Downers Grove. We like to try to, as a small team, try to use Friday afternoons when places are open to go and have little mini meetings over beer. So
For sure. Okay. We
just went over at Goldfinger and joined some lager the other week.
Nice.
So yeah, I mean, I actually think that this Ogden corridor is actually kind of growing. We're the newest addition, but there's kind of Goldfinger right off Ogden. There's Alter there in Downers Grove. There's us, Salmo, Noon Whistle are all kind of, following that same path.
That's awesome, man. Sounds like all right, so you got to make it out to Bubble House. You got a lot of options for other places to hit up. Food here, you got Bavarian Lodge, you could even just, if you're going over to Oakbrook too, there's all those food options and another Alter there that has food.
Yeah, so. That's the fun thing that we found is like because we're close to 88 and 355, a lot of the places that we try to travel to aren't that actually far. You know, we can get to Church Street and Itasca in 20 minutes or so, a lot of these places are situated in industrial spaces, which are commonly off of well-traveled, highways and major roads. So we actually have a pretty good jumping off point that we're trying to kind of expand.
Unlike the town we come from, where it's taking an hour to go fucking 2 miles.
2 miles, yeah.
So it's cool. It's a totally different scene. I would encourage anybody, man, if you want an excuse to come escape Occupy Chicago, or if you're in another suburb, northern burb, or wherever you are, you can come make a day out of the western suburb run. So that'd be cool. And make Bubble House one of the stops. This is a very cool spot.
So. Yeah. So, yeah. Cheers. Thanks for having us. This was great.
Brad, Nick, appreciate it. Thanks for coming out.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Take care.